You are listening to the Health Hack Podcast, powered by Lumen and hosted by myself, Caroline Pierce. As an athlete, sports scientist, and sports presenter, I am passionate about health and how we can unlock the skills to hack our full potential. Each episode, I'll be joined by a leader in the health and well-being world to learn how they've come to understand their body and turned that knowledge into power that could help you too. Today's guest is an actual Amazon warrior, having played an Amazon in both of the Wonder Woman movies. She's a personal trainer with a successful business, Pace and Go. She's also the character Enigma from the TV show UK Gladiators and my former training partner in heptathlon and bobsled. Jenny Pacey, how are you doing?
I'm so good. How are you, Caroline?
I'm doing really good. And Jenny and I go back a long way. We've been training partners since university, Loughborough University back in the UK. And we've had very parallel lives, haven't we, with being on Gladiators and competing for Great Britain in heptathlon and bobsled. But she's always been a huge inspiration to me. And one of, I do want to just first start by saying, Jenny and I used to sit in ice baths together after our training sessions, 10 minutes at a time, baths full of ice, reduce inflammation, all the things athletes do. So this week in Los Angeles, while she's visiting from the UK, I invited her to an ice bath with me at my local Monarch gym. And you didn't quite have the same tolerance that you used to have, Jen, did you, to say the least?
You sat in there for minutes. I think I managed a minute with like the most amount of physical restraint to stay in that ice bath. It was, I'm deconditioned. I think it's been 10 years, Kaz, since I've done one.
Gosh, well, I know you're very conditioned to your training though. And I want to start by talking about your Wonder Woman experience, both in front of the camera as an Amazon and behind the scenes as a trainer of the whole cast of the movie. Just talk to us about how that came about and the whole experience.
So I retired from competitive sport when I turned 30. And the year after, I had this Twitter message saying, would I like to audition for a major Hollywood film? And I thought it was a bit of a hoax at the time, but it turned out to be a legitimate agent. And I had three auditions. I went through two different boot camps at Warner Brothers. And I ended up getting a role as an Amazon warrior. And it was a really incredible experience because we went through 4 months of training with the training team, and it involved hypertrophy training. So they bulked us all up, made us lean and athletic and muscular. And then we also learned a whole new skill set. So I learned how to sword fight, how to use bow and arrow, how to work with a shield and the whole stunt team. And we went through this long process, this big boot camp, and then ended up flying to Italy to film the incredible opening scenes in the first movie. And from there, they ended up, it was such a huge success. It was one of the highest grossing movies in Hollywood. And they commissioned the second film, Wonder Woman 84, and Patty Jenkins, the director, decided to have a female lead trainer for the movie, which is really quite unusual in Hollywood. And I ended up being the first woman in the world to train a female army for a film. And I had several auditions again with, and then interviews with Patty. And I ended up getting the amazing role as being the lead trainer for all the Amazons in the second film. And then I also got the job to transform Kristen Wiig to Cheetah. And most of us know Kristen as like the skinny, funny girl from Bridesmaids. And I had this incredible opportunity and challenge to take her from a non-trained comedian into the badass Cheetah. And part of her journey as a character was not only to transform her personality into, she started off as like a goofy, funny girl and then becoming the apex predator, Cheetah, but also to transform her body chronologically with the film. So as you watch the movie unfold, you as an audience see her body transform and become more athletic, muscular, lean. And also we worked on her movement patterns. So I trained her like an athlete, so she would also move like an athlete, and that would translate onto camera for the audience.
That's incredible, because first off, I think most of us after watching the Wonder Woman movies thought to ourselves, I want to be an Amazon. We were so inspired by these badass athletic women that could do these incredible things that were ruling the world. And you were responsible for getting those women in that shape. And with Kristen Wiig as well, just what you're saying there, and I didn't quite realize that you had to get her in certain shape as she went along. So it wasn't start the movie in the best shape of your life. It was incremental. And that's a huge challenge. It's actually inspiring because it shows us that, you know, the skinny girl can turn into the athletic, muscly girl, or I'm sure the opposite if someone wants to lose weight and get in shape as well. But what's the biggest challenge with all of that? But whether it be physical or psychological?
One of the challenges is the timing of the movie. So I'd read through the script and I'd be like, okay, she's got this scene here where she gets her arms out for the first time, or there's this scene here in the gym where she's going to weightlift and do like a clean. So she needed to not only have transformed like in her physique, in her arms, in her strength, but also within her movement patterns. And Caroline, as an athlete, you know, it takes a long time to learn to weight train or Olympic lift beautifully as well as technically. So it was that challenge of transforming her muscle mass. And she was in her mid-40s and she's worked out before, but it's working, you know, with someone's capacity. So you push them towards the edge of their limit or towards the edge of their line, but without pushing them too far. So you get adaptation, but without injury or without reducing their immune system. It's that game where you want, you know, 40 Amazon warriors to look incredibly athletic, but feminine and lean and muscular. And Patty came to me at the beginning and she was like, Jenny, I want these women to look a certain way because they physically are a certain way. So if you see an athlete, a sprinter in the Olympics, they look the way they do because they can move at the speed that they do, they can lift the weights that they do. They're a byproduct of their training, as opposed to looking at a bodybuilder who has trained, say, arms one day, legs one day, back one day, and they've manipulated their body into a certain aesthetic. So my challenge also, one of the biggest challenges, was that Amazons came from all different walks of life and were all different ages from all different backgrounds. So I had many girls that were dancers and had never picked up a weight before, and they were in their 20s. And then I had an Olympic long jumper in her late 30s who was an incredible athlete and could sprint, you know, like she was in the Olympics. I had a mum of three in her early 40s. I had this great mixture, like, of boxers, stunt women, gymnasts, dancers, athletes, and it was to bring all of their training together, periodized over 4 months, to make them all peak at the same point, like it was the actual Olympics, but it was on screen for the filming. So it was getting all of these women, and I had to also stage them incrementally. So I started week one with the dancers that had never weightlifted, and then when I would bring in the Olympic athlete Jade later down the line, because she didn't need as much physical training from me,
she had the fundamentals already for, yeah,
exactly. And training people to run beautifully as well was a huge part of my job. So I've often watched movies and I'm like, the lead actress, you know, they've taught them to fight, or they've taught them to swim properly, or they've taught them, you know, to horse ride. But I watch people run on movies and it's awful. Like Phoebe Out of Friends, kind of like with really bad running gait technique and knee valgus. And so a big part of what I did was teaching dancers to, say, dorsiflex. That means you pull your toe up or have the right carrying angle in the arm. And I wanted to create this beautiful cohesion between all of the Amazons. So they looked like they were competing against each other, but they had this beautiful flow state of movement on the screen for the audience.
That definitely came across, and that's testament to you that you took all these different physical bodies and abilities and got them to that same space at the same time. With the average person, I mean, we've not all got the benefit of having a celebrity trainer such as yourself train with us day in, day out. So I know the amount of work you put into that. But we want to, or a lot of people want to aspire to be able to feel that way, that gladiatorial Amazonian goddess, if you like the way you've described it. How does the everyday person take some of those principles that you used with the Amazons, with Kristen Wiig, and apply that to their own training? Like, what can we take away from that?
The Amazon mindset. I think it starts with that you're within your belief that anything is possible. So as an athlete, we follow the process of a growth mindset. And that means that your ability is related to how much effort you put in. You're not in a fixed moment in time or a fixed moment in your body or in your mindset where you are. Whatever you put in, how much practice, how much dedication, how much training, how much positivity will hugely or completely affect the outcome. So that's the start of the Amazons, like to end up into alongside an Olympic athlete and keep up is amazing. Also that, you know, the training process, it's scientifically backed. If you create the correct periodization, you create the correct amount of weight training, progression, mixed in. I also did yoga and meditation and then some dance training. So there was aesthetic movement practice as well as body transformation. And it's within that combination that we ended up achieving the amazing scenes at the beginning of the movie. So it's really a growth mindset. You know, anything is possible with the right program, determination and consistency.
You know, you and I talk about the athlete mindset a lot, don't we? Because we feel it's the athlete mindset, and I'll maybe get you to describe it in more detail. You can apply to all walks of life. And I think our mindset is what makes us right, make the right dietary choices, gives us the motivation or the kick up the ass that we need to get into the gym and do what we do. But it's a dedication, isn't it? It's having structure. It's having that belief. But what else would you add to that? What is the athlete mindset that we've benefited from, but we try and get clients to get into as well when they're about to embark on a fitness journey?
I think two of the key things are consistency. So as an athlete, we pre-plan a program. Every day of the week, we know what we're doing. If it's an Olympic weightlifting session, if it's a sprint session, and if it's a rest or active recovery day. And you're 80% more likely to achieve your goals if you write them down. So as an athlete, we had that program set out of it in front of us. And we also got really comfortable within the uncomfortable. You know, the days, Caroline, when we were sprinting on a freezing cold hill in minus temperatures at Loughborough University on a hangover, probably in my case, but it didn't matter, you know, if it was snowing, if it was raining, and if it was Christmas Day, it was part of our lifestyle and our process, just as brushing your teeth is something you do in the morning and the evening because you want your breath to be fresh and your teeth to be healthy. For us, you know, training, we wanted to be the best that we could be in our sports. So it was just part of our daily process. And I think if the average person who wants to be fitter and healthier and improve their wellness just includes maybe even a walk within their day, a 20-minute walk, or a weight training session, or a yoga session, whatever your thing is that makes you feel good and you know contributes to your wellness, to factor it into your day like you would in your diary, like picking up your kids or having breakfast or when you have dinner, factor it in so it is a consistent part of your day. And then the other part of the athlete mindset, which I've only really realized recently, is that athletes do not dwell on the stuff that goes wrong. We do not dwell on the shit that happens. So within our training sessions, if something didn't go so well, like you didn't lift a personal best in weight training, you would look back on your video playback, work out what happened, establish why, and then forget it. You would never, ever replay that video clip or that process in your mind. Whereas I think so many people, especially women, go over and over and over something that didn't go well or didn't go to their plan, which only kind of puts it in this perpetual loop within your mind, which then filters into all of life. Whereas I think as athletes, we got really good at just getting rid of the shit and not dwelling on it. And that's definitely something that I've brought my adult life.
Yeah, that's certainly the spiral we see a lot of people go down, that one cookie or that one fries and or pizza that sort of sends you down that spiral and tunnel towards binging and not being able to get back on track. And I've had a lot of people say to me, it's like, well, how are you motivated to work out every day? And I always say, well, I'm not relying on motivation. I'm relying on what you said. It's like brushing my teeth. I just do it, even when I don't want to. And I think it is about becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable and knowing that sometimes to achieve our goals, it's not always going to be easy. We've got to push ourselves, same way in our career and everything else that we do. But what specific strategies would you give for those people outside of maybe the writing it down and making it a schedule, that if you are tumbling, you are feeling yourself, you know, weeks have gone by and you haven't worked out and it's just taking that first step to get back on the treadmill, go for a walk, make some healthy food or order some healthy food, whatever it might be. What other strategies do you employ with yourself or your clients? Because I think a lot of people say, well, it's all very well. You are an athlete. You have that inbuilt in you. You have that mindset. We probably do to an extent, but it can also be learned and it can also be practiced and reinforced, right?
Yeah. And it's down to habit and behavior. So you've got cue, routine, reward to create a habit. For instance, if you keep doing what you're doing, nothing will change. Say you have decided, I prefer working out in the morning. I need to work out in the morning, but I just don't want to because I wake up in the morning and I'm tired. So instead, try something different. Maybe you put your trainers and your workout kit, or your sneakers and your workout kit, just by your bed. So your different cue, you wake up, you see your workout gear, you put it on straight away. So you take out the cognitive effect of, oh, I'm so tired, do I want to work out, do I not? So you pop your workout kit on, that's your cue. Your routine, maybe you decide, I'm going to go to a local class. So I'll go to the yoga workout around the corner, or I'll go to a boot camp in the park. So your routine then changes, and then you would add in this feeling of community and working out with other people, which then makes you accountable on top. But then what people often don't do is a reward. And we were discussing how much we love protein shakes with peanut butter. And I was like, I always make my favorite shake with banana, oat milk, peanut butter, like my favorite protein powder, maybe some chocolate in there for post-workout. So I continually give myself a reward. And when I train clients, for instance, we finish a workout and I always say, give yourself a hug and tell yourself something nice. And that neurologically stacks.
I like that.
It's such a good thing to do. Yeah. And even in the gym, I give myself a hug because I neurologically stack together the feeling, the endorphin feeling post-workout, but then also that self-care, self-love feeling and a nice thought. So it means you're much more likely to continue with whatever habit you're trying to create, especially the exercise habit. And remember, it takes 21 days to create the habit, but then it takes 90 days to create a behavior. So it's about that consistency. And as you said, motivation, it's like a wave, it goes up and down. And it's also like a muscle, it's stronger in the morning and it's weaker in the evening. So if you know you're starting this fitness journey, you maybe need to factor in your workouts at the beginning of the day, or factor in making your healthy lunch at the beginning of the day, because you know you're going to be a bit knackered and tired and going for like more sugary foods at lunchtime. So take your lunch with you to take away the cue of going to, say, a canteen, and then the routine of eating something you don't want to. So it's creating that intervention, and it might be getting a personal trainer. So, you know, in the morning, you don't want to have a 24-hour cancellation fee. So you make sure you do train, because your personal trainer knocks on the door or you meet them in the gym. Yeah. It's creating that change in your life that will get you closer towards your health goals.
And I know your business, Pace and Go, you run with your partner, your real life partner and business partner, Wayne Gordon, an incredible human being in himself. Also a bobsledder, gladiator, actor in Vikings and James Bond movies. The two of them together are quite a force. But one thing that you've talked about and we talked about is how powerful it is to have a support system and someone else that shares that healthy living and drive to be fit and to exercise and to eat well. How can other people get their partner into doing more with them if they don't, or getting a situation where the friends that you spend your time with, you're doing more active things? How important is that, firstly, and how can you curate that within your life so you have that support system? Because we're more motivated together. Like you say, when the trainer knocks on the door, for example, you're more likely to do it because someone's keeping you accountable.
Yeah, you become a sum of the five people you spend the most time with. And in the UK, 67% of the population are obese, and in America it's even more. So if you hang out with, you know, the majority of your friends are overweight or obese, and then you start taking on their behaviors, which we do. For instance, if you go to dinner with more than six people, you eat 50% more calories. And if you're having dinner with a group of people who are obese, which is probably statistically likely, you're going to be eating even more calories than you should do anyway, but 50% on top. So it can be hard, but sometimes you have to shift your social circle. And this is why I suggested maybe going to a group fitness class like yoga or a workout in the park or a circuit class or boxing, whatever your thing is, because you're going to start to surround yourself with like-minded people who have behaviors and habits that will help serve your goals. And it's not a case of, you know, not seeing your best friend anymore, but it might, if they are not helping serve your lifestyle and goals, if they're always like, oh, let's meet for dinner, and you always go to an Italian and you're going to have a carbonara because that's what you guys do and share two bottles of wine, that's probably not going to help you reduce your body fat long term. And it might be a case of, you know, you change the circumstance within the where you meet those people that you know might sabotage your goals, or you know, the kind of things that you like to experience in life are not going to set you towards your goals. So for instance, for me, I don't go out Monday to Friday for dinner with anybody. I don't really socialize. I tend to focus on my business. I train clients. I go to the gym. I walk the dog. I eat clean and lean. And I'm healthy. And then Friday night to Sunday is my time where I do what I want. I enjoy wine and margaritas and tequila, and I maybe eat out three or four times. But that's the balance I've found. And lots of people are like, you never come out in the week. I'm like, no, I don't, because I will not be able to live the kind of life that I want to live and achieve the goals physically and health-wise and training-wise if I go out too much. So it's a case of, you know, designing your life and thinking about the kind of people you want to surround yourself with. And sometimes there's hard decisions to make, and being aware of those people that do sabotage you. And sometimes it's family, which is really difficult. I remember like always going to my grandparents. I never eat so many sandwiches and biscuits. And if I had a friend,
and they guilt you into it, don't they?
You do. You can't help it. It's like the amount of Kit Kats that came my way at my grandma's. Yeah. But and before I had a photo shoot, for instance, for like a cover shoot or something, I would not go home to see my family because I know it just, I would be sabotaged. It just doesn't work for me. So I would just make sure I book in going home the week after the shoot, for instance. And it's just designing your life. And I think also looking after yourself too, making those choices that best serve you. For instance, the amount of mums that I train that like create healthy breakfasts and lunches for their kids, but don't prioritize themselves. And as soon as they do start to prioritize themselves and their health, it has this huge ripple effect into the family and the family's behaviors, which has a positive impact not only on the mum's health, but on everybody else's health. So it's prioritizing yourself too, without guilt.
Yeah, there's some really great advice in there. Lots of things for people to take away. And something I've always admired in you is your balance. You know, we have some trainers and some people that have discussed with us on the podcast or with me personally have said, no, you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't enjoy the wine and the cookie and all the rest of it. You know, if you're really serious about reaching your fitness goals or your dietary weight loss goals, but you have this ability to, you know, we go out and you will have a few glasses of wine or tequila and you will eat the cake and the cookies, and cookies are one of our favorite things. But you're able, like you said, to be very strict that Monday to Friday that you're not going out. And that takes willpower, it takes discipline, it takes structure and all the rest of it, which is not something everybody has in abundance or has to work a little bit harder at. So first of all, is it possible for somebody starting out on their fitness journey to have that balance? Or do you think you have to go a little bit more hardcore in the beginning if you want to make changes? Because maybe emotionally or psychologically, you're not very good at being that strict in the week and then allowing yourself the food or whatever at the weekend. Is it different for whatever stage you're at is what I'm asking?
It is different. And it also depends on your level of fat storage. So if you're coming from a place of morbid obesity or obesity, you are probably not going to be able to do what I just described. There's a number of functions within the body. For instance, there's trigger foods. So if you're coming from a place of obesity and the majority of your body fat cells have been overfull with fat for a long time, and then on top of that, you end up growing more fat cells, which continuously communicate to your brain and tell your body that they want to be full. So you've created this number of mechanisms within the body which you have to fight against or which you have to manage. So there's a scientific theory that there's a certain amount of salt, fat and sugar that you can have within the mouth, which is a huge trigger and which takes away one's ability to stop. especially if you're coming from a place of obesity. So if you understand these things, also if you are overweight, the receptors in your brain for dopamine are not as responsive. So it takes a lot more to feel the feelings of pleasure, for instance, or satiation, which means you're probably going to eat more like a whole pack of cookies rather than being able to have one. And if you are the kind of human that knows you have one cookie and you cannot stop, it's that trigger, and you just keep going and eat the whole packet, then you're probably going to have to avoid eating one cookie, especially if you are at the beginning of the journey.
You've got to strengthen your habits and your mindset before. Yeah.
Also to change like your gut microbiome and the communication between the brain, and take away that trigger that would make you have that process where you're like, oh my God, it tastes so good, I can't stop, I want to stop, but I can't. You maybe just can't have the piece of food that starts that trigger. And you've maybe got to get through 90 days. You may need to also work out the link between your emotions and your eating patterns. So, you know, if you're bored, if you're happy, if you're sad, we like celebrate with cake, and we feel depressed, we eat chocolate. It's, you need to figure out your why, and how food fits into your why as well. There's a great quote, I'm eating my emotions. And so many people do that. And it's learning what you can do instead. So maybe like you bring in meditation, or maybe, you know, going for a walk in nature, or doing a kickboxing class changes your mindset, as opposed to eating food to numb or change or fill a hole. Or it's working out the why and working out what can work instead. You know, if you're coming from that a place of obesity and not having an off button when it comes to eating.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about success being, you know, 80% diet, 20% exercise, but I'd say a huge percentage of that's the mind before any of that has to be right before you embark on any of those things. You mentioned the gut, and I know on that note, I know you have followed for some time a diet called the FODMAP diet, F-O-D, FODMAP diet. And that's linked to our gut health and a diet specifically for people with irritable bowel syndrome, IBS as it's known. And I'd love you to tell us a little bit more about that, because when I saw you start doing that, I was so fascinated. Like, what is this diet? I've heard of keto, intermittent, all these things, but very few of us have heard of that, yet I think a lot of people could benefit from it.
Yeah, it's been really life-changing for me. We were talking about being an athlete earlier, and I found that as an athlete, you do loads of things that are not normal and you think they're normal. So we would be like such low body fat, we wouldn't have periods, and we just think, oh, that's normal. And for me, I used to have an upset stomach every single day. And I just thought that was normal to like wake up with some diarrhea. And a few years ago, we had a royal client, and we brought in a specific nutritionist dietitian to work with them. But part of the process of whoever we work with, we ask them to show us what they do. So she was like, oh, the fabulous nutritionist called Vivi. I was like, can you do a nutrition plan for me? And we were talking about, you know, my energy levels, my digestion, and what foods I liked and didn't like, because I have various allergies. I'm allergic to chicken, cod, prawn, and red wine, for instance. So we were talking through all these things. And she was like, oh, so you have diarrhea every morning still? I was like, yeah, pretty much. And we talked through what I would eat in the evening, for instance, which would be what I thought was healthy. So like broccoli and asparagus, for instance, with like a big portion of protein. So she's like, I think you've got irritable bowel syndrome. And I was like, really? No. And she then explained to me about FODMAP and the foods that are triggers. So in FODMAP, there's different indexes of foods, and it's largely carbohydrate related. There are certain foods we think that are very healthy, and other foods like milk, for instance, and they have short chain carbohydrate molecules, which the body doesn't digest so easily. So instead of the carbs being digested and then going to your bloodstream, it ends up going into your intestine and colon, and it's fermented, which then produces hydrogen, and it also draws water into the intestine, which then can create diarrhea and gas and bloating or constipation. And this is like the digestive issues I was discussing. So at the beginning of the FODMAP plan, you have several weeks, like 2 to 6 weeks, where you eliminate. And this is where you take out all those high FODMAP foods. And so, for instance, in fruit, it would apples and apricots are really high on the map. Fructose, milk, yogurt would be really high. In vegetables, things that I thought were super healthy, like broccoli, asparagus, and onion and garlic are huge triggers. So you eliminate all of these things, and then you start to eat more of the gut or microbiome improving foods. So I had black rice, for instance, and I have papaya before I eat anything in the morning, and to help heal the gut. And you sort of eliminate lots of things. It's pretty difficult for the first few weeks. And then you gradually bring things back in and see what your body can tolerate in small measures. And then you start to personalize your plan. So you work out what works for you, what doesn't. For instance, I know, you know, if I eat garlic bread, so wheat's very high on the FODMAP. If I had garlic bread, I would be in all sorts of cramps and pain, and my stomach would be very upset the other next day. And I also notice now a trigger with my face. So part of my allergies is my eyes swell up. And if I eat high FODMAP foods, then my face would go as well as my stomach. So it's been a program that I've followed and been more mindful of. And it's almost been counterintuitive because, like, we think broccoli.
I was going to say, so many of those foods you mentioned are healthy foods, aren't they? You know, I've looked at the list, asparagus and all these foods you think are healthy, garlic. So it's not that they're not healthy. It's that if you have this sort of intestinal issue, IBS, it's not good for you and your condition.
Yeah, and so many people suffer with digestive issues. And when you understand, you know, that these foods are taken into the intestine and they suck in the water, they produce the hydrogen, that's where you get the gas, and they ferment and they're not digested in the same way, you're like, oh, that makes sense. And if I just eat accordingly, and I believe in the 80-20 rule, so I try and be, like I was saying, really, you know, mindful and clean and eat the foods that service my body and my energy and make me feel good 80% of the time. But then at the weekend, you know, I might end up not feeling so great after eating out because there's so much garlic in food or onion in food. But I found, like, having the papaya and these gut healing foods has really helped. And now there's so much research on the gut microbiome linking to, you know, your skin, your mental health, your performance. And as an athlete, I wish I had known this, because I'm really sure that if I had eaten via the FODMAP plan or more for my body and what worked for my body, I would have had an improved performance within sport.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's about personalization, isn't it? Knowing what's right for us and getting feedback about our body. And I introduced you this week to Lumen, our metabolic tracker. And the idea with that is that it will tell us how much carbohydrate. I mean, it actually sounds like it would fit very well for the FODMAP, because it's telling us how much carbohydrate we're burning or if we're in a fat burning state. What did you think of it, Jen? Because I know with the number of clients you have, it would be really valuable insight into their results and if what sort of nutrition plan you're giving them is working for them.
Yeah, I thought it was an amazing project because it takes away all the guessing. Like, you know what's happening internally within your body. And we talk so much about, like, fasting and macronutrient balance and burning fat, or like our energy levels. It just tells you, you know, are you burning fat in the morning? Are you burning carbohydrates? And you can look at it gauged on your energy levels or your mood. Then you know what to eat pre-training, post-workout. It takes out all the guessing game. And I watch so many, say, influencers on Instagram, and they're telling us to fast or do this or do that, or this is what I eat in a day. It's like, it really doesn't matter what you eat in a day, because the average person shouldn't just copy what somebody else does because they put it on Instagram. And I feel like this product takes away all the questions. You make it personal to you and your body and your cells and your DNA and your digestive enzymes and how long it takes you to digest carbs. And you know if you need to finish eating at 6 o'clock or 8 o'clock to get a better night's sleep and then be in a better fat burning position the next day. So I think it's amazing to personalize and help you understand you, which is the key when it comes to health and fitness and wellness.
Yeah, I mean, I tested my breath with the Lumen device this morning, and having fasted this morning, I figured I'd be in a fat burning state, and I've quite excited about that, but I wasn't. I was sort of burning 50% carbohydrate and 50% fat because we had a late meal last night. So that's feedback, and it all, and then it gave me some advice. It said, well, it could also be because you had disruptive sleep, I looked at my other tracking device, which told me, yes, I had disruptive sleep. So it's all really valuable. We're certainly sending you home with a Lumen, Jen, and you can use this with your clients and have them try it out as well. But metabolism is, we talk about personalization, metabolism is something that changes even within ourselves as we get older. I mean, you're not burning calories at the same rate in your, you know, in your 30s as you were in your 20s or 40s as you were in your 30s, and certainly postmenopausal for a lot of women. What other things can we do to prevent that sluggish metabolism or boost our metabolism as we get older, or just if we're someone that, you know, just unfortunately has a poor metabolism?
I think sleep is key, really, really key. It affects so much, like our hormone balance, our energy balance, our appetite, the food we go for, our mental health. I think to prioritize sleep is incredibly important. And then I think particularly as a woman and pre and postmenopausal weight training, I don't know if you know, but to add 1 kilo of muscle to your body increases your calorie burn by 70 calories a day. So if you're trying to lose
weight, that's a lot,
and you lose 1 kilo of fat, for instance, you're probably going to lose 1 kilo-ish of muscle at the same time if you're not working out and you're only dieting. And that means that you're going to reduce your calorie burn by 70 calories a day. So you reduce your basal metabolic rate or your daily calorie burn by just dieting alone. But if you work on your nutrition, I hate the word diet, but if you work on your nutrition, your macros and your calorie intake, and you also weight train at the same time, so you're reducing the body fat but increasing the muscle mass, that's how you don't yo-yo diet and how you can increase your basal metabolic rate and look after your metabolism, as opposed to kind of crashing it as you drop the weight. Then you end up eating a bit more, you put on the body fat but not the muscle, and that's how you end up yo-yo dieting and putting on more weight than you lost, because 83% of dieters fail. Which is, you know,
that's a huge percentage.
Huge. If you're on a diet, the likelihood is you're going to put on more weight and be more obese afterwards. Whereas if you train or you create a eating program that you can maintain really for the rest of your life, and changing, you know, with certain things like I said, when I retired from sport, obviously there was digestive things that changed within me. But if you create a program, you can maintain for 10, 20 years, but then maintain consistent weight training with it. I think that's how you find the balance and the key and create a healthy, maintainable weight.
Yeah. And the word diet, like you say, we don't like to use it because it has a negative connotation. And like you said, what percentage was it of people that diet fail? 87% of diets, people that are dieting fail. But diet, if you look up the word diet, it actually just means a way of eating. So it doesn't have to be a negative, restrictive problem. It is purely just a nutrition plan, a way of eating. And like you said, one that we can sustain for long term is the one that we should be following, the one that's personal to us. And then looping back to training again, because you started at the beginning talking about the Wonder Woman training and the movement patterns. And I know something you're really big on, and I assume you do with your clients, is the functional training and the mobility training. So not just about lifting heavy, you know, getting the booty, biceps, whatever it might be. Let's just sort of finish off with the importance of functional training and mobility, because I think both of those things can sometimes get a little bit lost amongst the desire to just be in shape and not really think about the way we're moving.
Yeah, so mobility is as important as strength training to me, because it reduces your risk of injury. It increases your range within how you can move, which is what we want to do. We don't just want to isolate a bicep and work in this manner, you know, for 20 years. You want to be able to have full shoulder flexion mobility, so you can be functional in all aspects of life. So I think combining numerous forms of training, from like I do stick mobility, I do yoga, I do functional mobility, and then combine it with strength training. And as athletes, I think the fittest people in the world are athletes and sports professionals. And we tend to work the whole body. We don't do a leg day, an arm day, an ab day, a back day, because we want to create a connection from our toes to our head. We want our entire body to function together in a united performance manner. And I think by just isolating your arms, you don't create that. So I still train functionally which means I use my whole body in every single workout. And then in our 20s, we felt like we were invincible, didn't we? We worked out 4 hours.
We did, I know.
We like squatted double our body weight. We like cleaned 90 kilos. We were invincible. But in my 30s, I have to be a lot more thoughtful about how I move my body. And I've realized, for instance, I don't need to lift 100% or one rep max anymore to get the same like muscle density or strength gains. I can work at maybe 50% of what I used to do, and it means I won't get injured, but I tend to maintain my muscle mass, I maintain my physique, I maintain my movement patterns and my skill set, but I don't need to push to those limits and those edges that we used to find when we were professional athletes. And I think it's, you know, it's that combination of, for me, I do breath work like Kapalabhati at the beginning of a workout. So I'm working my core, connecting my mind, my body and my soul, and then moving into, say, mobility and then the strength training and vision with core or stretch. And then I often meditate at the end of a workout. So it's a lot more, I connect everything now. It's not just about performance or pushing myself. And I find the mobility, yoga, the flexibility is a really wonderful way of starting that process. Not just training my body, but giving my mind a really nice time during a workout as well.
I think it takes away the thought of exercising purely for physical gains and weight loss. With your focusing on movement patterns and achieving something in a performance sense, I think you'll get the results, but you're not focused on those results or that incessant need to burn calories and so forth. Do you know, Jen, I could talk to you for so much longer, and luckily I get to do so off of the podcast, but you're mindful of information and an inspiration to me and so many, and really appreciate your time here today on the Health Hack Podcast. Where can everybody follow you and just give us a quick update on what's coming next for you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, Jenny Casey. Also, I've got a website, paceandgo.co.uk. I've got lots of exciting things coming up. There's some new movies. I've got some amazing clients at the moment. I've started training politicians, which has been really interesting in England, especially with the
high stressed clients, I'm sure.
especially with the way the world is at the moment. I'm also working on a weight loss wellness TV show format to really help people how to understand how to be in that 13% of successful dieters, as we call it, or people who are trying to be healthier and lose weight, because there's so much conflicting information out there and it's so difficult to navigate.
Brilliant. Well, we look forward to lots more from you, Jenny. Thank you so much. Catch you soon.
Bye.
And thank you for listening to the Health Hack Podcast with myself, Caroline Pierce. Each episode provides a healthy dose of health hacking, so make sure to hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out. I would be truly grateful if you could rate and review wherever you're listening to help others seeking inspiring stories and health hacks to find us. The Health Hack is an Insanity Podcast production and powered by Lumen. See you next time.